Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword. I have a really fun show today. So I've been teasing this for a couple weeks. I wanted to get a big group of Cavs people on to talk Cavs and answer questions from you, the listeners, which we got a ton this week. Instead of just having one person, I finally was able to get a full crew. So I have three members of the Fear the Sword staff with me today. So first up, we have Carter Rodriguez in Chicago. Carter, how's it going?
Good. It's good to hear that you have at least three friends.
I have more than three friends. Wow.
Wait a minute. I said at least.
Oh, wow. That's still taking it a shade, but that's okay. Next, we have Daniel Rowell, also in Chicago, and who was the new Fear the Sword Chicago Bureau Chief because Carter is just being a punk right now.
Well, every actions have consequences, and I understand.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like I'm very qualified because I have a car, and I actually shoveled and cleaned off my driveway today. So, I mean, I am the official Chicago Bureau Chief now.
Yeah.
The sneaky, valuable thing about what Dan just said that a lot of non-urban dwellers might realize is the real value of what he just said is not that he has a car, it's that he has a driveway. Where do you live, Dan?
I live right next to all the Chicago Blackhawks in a magical place called Roscoe Village.
Well, how about that? What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive, indeed. And then lastly, we have Michael Drabcho, Fear the Swords. I think he's the newest staff writer to the site, and also an Ohio Bobcat. Like, Carter and I, Dan, you're the odd man out. I'm sorry. But, Mike, before we, like, get into this, can you just explain, like, why you're a Steelers fan? Like, we need to, like, roast you for a second about this.
Even though the Browns are terrible. Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. So, I'll start off by saying I am, in fact, a Cleveland native, but, my dad's side of the family is from Pennsylvania. Mom's side is from Cleveland. My mom's side of the family doesn't really care about sports all that much. So growing up, any interaction, any experience I had with sports was with my dad's side of the family. So I just kind of grew into it. It seemed the most natural thing. And I don't know. It's just how I've been pretty much my whole life.
It's gross.
I'm a Cowboys fan, so I don't get to say anything to anyone ever.
At least you got Zeke. Like, that's gross, yeah. Though.
11-1 isn't gross. I'll tell you what, Jack.
True story. Ow! True story. Didn't watch any NFL today. I watched The West Wing. That's what I did.
That's fair.
It's a solid show.
But, like, I'm getting to the point where Sorkin, like, messes everything up. So, like, where he's just like, I'm leaving the show. I'm going to make this impossible. So, I'm not really looking forward to that. But we got a ton of great questions. As always, you can submit questions to lockdowncavs@gmail.com or to @lockdowncavs on Twitter. We get pop culture questions sometimes, so if you want to drop one of those in, you can totally do that. But first question today.
I would love to know what person in these United States is like, I wonder what Chris and Carter, Dan and Mike.
Dude, every week I get one question that like somehow hits on like something else, and I was talking to Wes Goldberg, the host of Locked On Heat, and he was like, we get a guy every week that asks us like to recast Miami Vice with like heat players.
Well, how about it? Can we recap hot in Cleveland?
I mean, we could, but like that's probably like five people.
If it's watching not still running, I think that would be even more unique.
I don't even know.
Through the catalog.
Yeah, I mean, we
not a big TV Land guy, so I can't, or TV Guide channel, whatever the hell network.
I think it's like where like the Andy Griffith reruns are always on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's TV Land and TV Guide Network. That's a That's a multifaceted product.
Too many networks. That's all I got to say. There's too many networks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But first question this week comes from a frequent question contributor, and that's Perry Kellis. He says, why are the Cavs making things so hard? They want a pretty good defender who can shoot the three ball at PG. Quinn Cook seems like a perfect fit. Yeah, Felder's ceiling is higher, but why not just replace McCray via a small trade with Cook, send K to the D League, and then still under contract to develop him there and get what they want with Cook? So first off, they don't have to trade McCray to get Cook. Cook is not tied to the Cavs, just so everyone is clear. He is on the Charge, but he has a contract with the Charge, not with the Cavs. So the Cavs don't have his rights. So let's say tomorrow the Memphis Grizzlies, for example, want Quinn Cook. They could just go offer him a contract and sign him. Also, Quinn Cook, I'll just say this, and if one of you wants to go first. Quinn Cook, if the Cavs wanted him, they could have probably done this like last year if they were really like sold that he was going to be a guy. And I'm not sure they would have taken Felder if they felt like Quinn Cook was a guy, because they've seen him in summer league. They had his rights last year, I believe, and now he's just kind of on the Charge.
Do you guys really think Quinn Cook's very good? I don't know that many.
Not particularly.
Canton Charge. Which is, you know, that's my fault, but I don't know. I think the Cavs can do better, and I think that trying to just trade one D-leaguer for another is, like, not going to win you a championship any faster. So
that's this is such a first-world problem. Like, it's like he's going to be, like, the 10th man. I wonder if this Quinn Cook stuff comes from him being a Dookie.
Well, he just scored, like, 39 points in a game. Is what I think where this comes from.
In a D-League game?
Yeah, he just, like, balled out in a D-League game. Ended up on SportsCenter.
Oh, I don't care at all
then. Yeah, like, he just played really well in a D-League game.
I dropped 20 in my rec league last week. I mean, yeah.
Didn't McCray score 60 in a D-League game last year?
Yeah, pretty sure.
So there you go. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's hardly lighting up the world. It's these guys are fringe NBA players. They don't actually matter to the functional reality of what the Cavs are.
Yeah, I would agree.
Sorry.
That's fair. So, I mean, kind of going off of that, Kyle R. Asked, do the Cavs have something in Liggins? I saw him last night that he, and I would say this, he played 18 minutes after Jar was back and Dunleavy got a DMP, so, like, do the Cavs have something in this guy is what he wants to know. I think certainly we've seen people say that, right? We've seen people write about this that cover the Cavs that are, like, here in his spots in the rotation, and he's earned his place with the team. I mean, that's fine. It's been, like, 3 games.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think he's showing that he is at least an active defender and a guy who is going to provide a fair amount of energy on that end, which energy is something that Cavaliers often are missing on that end. I think he kind of had a bit of a regression to the mean game on the offensive end of the ball against the Hornets. Dropped a few passes, missed a point blank layup. But, Mike, I'll toss it to you. I mean, has he shown more than Dunleavy or Felder or McCray have? I feel like he probably has.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think he's shown more than those guys. And to me, it's just kind of like, you know what you're going to get with him. You know every time he steps on the floor, he's going to bring that energy. He's going to be a solid defender. He's not a guy that's going to be getting a ton of minutes, but I think you can definitely find a spot here or there to get him in the game and at least, you know, give Shump a breather, give someone a breather and give the team some quality minutes.
Yeah, I think ideally you'd want him and Dunleavy playing, right? I don't know, but I think in the regular season, you want to limit guys' minutes. JR's just coming back from a left knee injury. I think you can play both of them and still play Jefferson and just limit everybody's minutes. And does that necessarily mean an optimal rotation right now? No, but do I care that much about an optimal rotation right now? No. Like, you don't need
I guess
that.
To some extent. I guess I'm fine with a 10-man rotation in the regular season. They only played 8 guys last night. Other than 1 minute for Jordan McRae, with Fry still away from the team. I still think that the ninth man in the playoff rotation, assuming Dunleavy doesn't turn it around, which of course he very well could, But I think the ninth man in the playoff rotation still might not be on this team. It might be someone that they look to add in free agency or via trade. That December 15th deadline where you can't trade players who were signed this summer is coming up, and I think that we might see a bit of a flurry of activity. And I think the Cavs still need to figure out the Mo Williams situation. Yeah. Like, he's still on their books, and like they're kind of hamstrung until they figure out what the hell to do with him and his salary.
From the people that I've talked to and from my understanding of that situation, I think they just want to use him in a trade, personally. Like, I think that's kind of my read on it. Because there's no other incentive to keep him on the roster.
So just kind of use his salary along with someone like, I don't know.
Like, I think, and this leads into other questions we've gotten, but I think if you're talking about the Cavs' best possible trade package, it's first-round pick.
LeBron James.
Well, okay, Carter. All right. Well, tip of the hat to you for offering the snark answer, but if they're going to actually, someone they would actually trade, it's one of the future first-round picks that they have, Seti Osman's rights, and Mo Williams' $2.2 million salary. That's probably what you're looking at.
But what value does Mo Williams' salary have? None. Like after the cap jump? Like I don't know.
I mean matching.
Matching, but it doesn't
valuable for matching
relief.
Salaries.
It just doesn't offer relief.
Well, no, I don't. No, but like, yeah, I think that if you're looking to trade for like a low salary player, the Cavs can't take on. I guess they could use part of their trade exception, but I think they're probably dreaming a little bit bigger with that thing.
That's for something. If you can land something huge, that's what that trade exception's for. It's not for a $5 million wing player or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the problem with this trade exception stuff is just that we don't really have a player that is undervalued that would pair well with a trade exception. But I don't. Yeah. So I don't know how Cavs are going to use one. We have a bunch, and we have consistently just gotten more trade exceptions without using them. I'm a little pessimistic about our trade prospects, but I don't see how we're going to get a new, like, I don't think we're going to get anyone inside of our starting like 6-7 rotation with a trade exception.
Well, yeah. Luckily that those top 7 guys are pretty freaking good.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, just so everyone remembers, we've talked about this on the show before with Jacob Rosen and other people. Trade exceptions only have value when you can get basically a team to give them something to basically give you a player for nothing. Like, they were able to use the trade exception last year to get Channing Frye because they could just dump Anderson Varejao's contract. Like, those things only exist when you can package it with something else, because to another team, that trade exception does nothing. It's for the Cavs' use only.
Well, hold on. What? Hold on. I don't think that's true. I don't agree with that. Yeah, the Magic just wanted to cut Channing Frye's salary. The only reason Cavs traded Barrage.
It has to be that specific situation. Yes, like right now, I don't know how much that exists.
Barrage had nothing to do with the Magic trade.
It had
everything to do with the Cavs wanting to cut salary.
Right.
Wanted to clarify that.
But like, I think right now is kind of, and Dan hit on this a little bit. The with the cap having risen and with teams having A, spent a bunch of money, and B, the guys that the Cavs would get theoretically not really being guys that got tons of money or they're on undervalued deals. Like, we think about Trevor Rees is the guy every Cavs fan, not every Cavs fan, but a lot of them are like, okay, Cavs could get Trevor Rees. He didn't get paid under the new cap. Like, he's on a good deal for this salary cap. Those guys have more value because they're on a cheaper deal. And why would the Rockets trade a guy if you're getting Seti and a bad first round pick? The Cavs' first round pick, more than likely anyone they trade, is going to be bad. It's going to be like the 28th pick or something. That's not really a good chance of getting an actually good player. That's just the reality of it. The Cavs don't have the ability to, like, blow away a team with a trade offer. Unless they were like, here's Kevin Love, what are you going to give me? And they wouldn't do that at this point, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think they'll have to, if they're going to do it, it's going to have to be a team that maybe spent a little more than they should have this summer and started bumping up against that cap. And is deciding to give up early, because there are not a lot of legacy teams looking to cut salary, you know?
No.
There's just too much money out there. But a lot of it did get spent, in fairness. So,
yeah.
But a lot of those deals are too big for the Caps to absorb. So this new reality isn't quite as Dan's absolutely right, I think, that this new reality is not as easy for David Griffin to operate in with regard to the trade exceptions. Right. He's still really good.
Yeah. Moving on to the next question, Pabs Benatar, who has a great Twitter picture, you should go look at it, and a great name too, because Pabs Benatar is just funny. What's your favorite bad trade that you've seen suggested? I'm just going to say this, the one that always gets me, because it's the top of every Google search, when you search Kevin Love, even after he'd scored, even after the night he scored all those points against Portland, the first or second Google result item was Kevin Love and somebody for Boogie Cousins and Ben McLemore, and it's just like fake news sites keep repeating that. That is not a trade. And, like, I get questions about that, and I just ignore them at this point because there are so many issues with that. Kevin Love is playing insane, and he's not being traded for DeMarcus Cousins. Like, that's not going to happen.
You actually took my answer. That was my favorite bad trade, because I have people that text me all the time and ask me about it, and I repeatedly shoot them down and tell them that there's no way that that works and there's no way that that's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I always go back to my old faithful Kevin Love trade rumor. Or not even a rumor, just a suggestion. It was Kevin Love for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Marcus Morris, and Ersan Ilyasova, and a first-rounder from Zach Lowe, my guy. He's so good, and that was such a bad idea. And I know it's a podcast.
If you could get searched right now, you'd be blocked.
I would be in trouble. Hopefully he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Hi, Zach. Hi, Zach.
Yeah. I love Zach. I think he's the best NBA writer in the game right now. And I know on podcasts, when you throw out ideas, sometimes you say stuff you don't mean to. But that was so horrible. It was horrible at the time. It's even more horrible now. And I just cannot believe that people thought that Kevin Love was so bad that Ersan Ilyasova would provide some replicable like production. Oh, I was heated.
Noted Ersan Ilyasova hater, Carl Rodriguez is your new official title. Everyone now, they're not a bureau chief.
Yeah, everyone needs a thing, and that's my new thing.
I don't know if I've heard a bad trade. That's kind of been a fun part of winning, like, what, 16, 17 games now? Have you all heard a bad thing about the Cavs recently? Like, I know we need a point guard, but that's about it. Like, it's been pretty fun. Like, the most of the bad trades I hear involve the words, like, John Wall or Bradley Beal. But none too many Cavs related these days, so...
Cavs related shade has been like election, because people like blanket people from Ohio, and I'm just shaking my fist. Moving on, and it's another trade question, and I just gotta say, especially the Fear the Sword community, Cavs fans love their trade rumors. Like, all NBA fans love their trade rumors, but man, Cavs fans like thinking about trades. It's kind of fun. This question comes from Paul McFeely, Paul_McFeely. Best realistic deal using SETI and the TPE. I think it would have to be a 3-and-D wing, right? And I don't know if there's guys that fit your guys' ideas on this, but I think it would have to be a wing. It would have to be like a Ariza type, but that's probably the best scenario. Or like that. I mean, I just can't. Those guys are so hard to get, and they're harder to give up, especially for not a good deal.
I guess, you know, ideally you want to look for the kinds of players that are on, that are veterans, that are on contracts that fit inside the exception, obviously, that are on bad teams that have good talent behind them that the team just wants to incentivize to play. So someone like PJ Tucker. That guy, he's on an expiring deal, making $5.3 million. The Suns probably won't keep him. They have a glut of, you know, young players that need some his minutes, even though he's a nice player. and they're not any good. So he's not like leading them towards anything right now. So, I mean, with the expiring contract, he shouldn't fetch much in a trade for them. But if they're trying to extract some value, I guess that's my pick. And he'd be a really nice fit on the Caps.
Not to bring up that same bad trade y'all mentioned before, but like Ben McLemore might be a decent grab, right? Kings are pretty dumb. I'm sorry, Kings fans, but your franchise is poorly run. And Ben McLemore, I mean, like, I don't know. Every player, I think, should at least get two chances on two separate teams. And I think he could be good. He was good back when he played for Kansas. He shoots a decent amount. Like, I think adding another wing player like that, he might not have the size. It's more like a shooting guard, but he's another ball handler. I'd be up for it. So,
would you, just to be clear, Dan, would you do that deal? A first in Chetty for Ben McLemore, or is it just like a guy you think they could get?
That's a guy I think we could get, yeah.
But I would not do that deal. Would
I
you?
I wouldn't either.
Yes, I would do the deal.
Oh, yeah. No way, man. No yeah. way.
I mean,
anyway.
If I could right now, I'd like call in Trevor Magnotti and just like let him just talk for 5 minutes about Seti and lambasting Ben McLemore. I mean, I'd let him hang up and like go back so we could like decompress. But Ben McLemore, I just don't think is good. I know he probably needs to change the scenery, and like Boogie needs to change.
He can go play in Dallas.
He can go play in Dallas where he can like play a bunch of minutes. Like that's like everyone who needs a new team should just go to the Mavs. Did Dune Harry Bonds pretty well.
Just not in Cleveland. I have no need for that guy.
Yeah. He's not great.
Yep. If they're trading the first and Chetty, I want a guy who's going to appreciably help their chance of winning a title this year.
Yeah.
Because if not, like, what's the point of a project? You know, you already have a project. Chetty, who is a higher ceiling project and younger.
So let me ask you all this. Just give me a one-word answer. Would you actually consider trading Seti? Like, is he something you would actually consider getting rid of?
Sure.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm a bad example here. I just really don't care about Chetty at all. Like, I mean, he's an international player that probably looks pretty good because he's playing internationally. But tell me an international player that has come over and helped a team win a championship like that year. Like, it just doesn't really happen that often.
Tony Kukoc.
I was just gonna say that.
And I'm not like saying that like Seti is Tony Kukoc, but like I don't think
because he's better.
Wild card. Okay. I mean,
what Seti
represents is like a guy who can probably maybe fill minutes on a good team next year if he develops correctly. And he's realistically the Cavs' best prospect. And, like, I think you have to consider that. Because there is a point where if you're being super smart about this, and it's something the Heat didn't do very well, you have to know that there is a time after LeBron. That there's a time where things are going to change. And Seti isn't necessarily a guy that is going to be turned into your next franchise player or one of your best three players. We don't know that. But if that day is sooner rather than later, or that you just need a guy who is a youth and can give you a chance to not go from top of league to the bottom, Seti's a way to maybe bridge that gap a little bit. And he's under control. He's probably going to be pretty cheap if he comes over next year, like he says he wants to. So unless you get someone who's going to be around for more than a year, or for more than the rest of the year, I think you have to really think twice about dealing that guy. That's kind of just where I stand on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that he, like, when you have an asset that might carry value with the rest of the league, I don't know how the rest of the league views Chetty, but I think he's comfortably their best asset that they're willing to move. And in that capacity, you know, I just think that you just don't move him for a guy that you're not sure is going to help, because what's the point of that? Like, Ben McLemore has no track record of being useful.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, BOOM.
to your point, Chris, about the time after LeBron, life after LeBron, couldn't you argue, though, that since it is a finite window, that you just go for broke now and go after as many rings as possible, which they're doing, but couldn't you just say, trade them, get what you can now, and just try to win while you can, and then figure out life after LeBron when you get to that point?
I think it depends on who you would get. Like, I think if you're getting, if like the Knicks call you tomorrow and are like, we'll get, if you give us Seti and a pick, we'll give you Courtney Lee, I'm probably going to think about that pretty hard. But if like,
I would do that in an instant, yeah. But do you think they're going to do that?
No, I'm just saying like in like a vacuum, if like that, if you get that type of deal. But if the Suns call you and are like, okay, we want like Seti a pick and, you know, Mo Williams a salary or like a deal like that for that much for PJ Tucker, I think about that because PJ Tucker is kind of whatever and he's not under team control for next year. Like, I think you can't just like get a guy that's maybe going to help you and you have to integrate within the next 4 months and give up all of that and use all of your assets for a guy for like a rental, because it's going to be really hard for the Cavs to re-sign anybody that they trade for.
Also worth noting that PJ Tucker is not a obscenely young man. He's 31 years old.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah,
he got into the league late, and I think people forget that.
Yeah.
He's going to fall off soon.
Yeah. You have to, like, I think consider a lot of things. You have to consider how seamlessly that guy's going to fit into. Like, I think you have to, like, think, is this a guy that actually is going to just come in and fit a specific role for us? And because I don't think you just give up all of your assets for a rental. Like, I just wouldn't do that. But if you get Courtney Lee, like, sure. But if you get, but that guy, that's a unicorn.
And that's part of what, made Channing Frye a nice deal, because his salary declines for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was already, like, $8 million, which was, I guess, too much for the Magic to pay, even though they spent $15 million on Jeff Green this year. Shade. But
I can't wait for Sam Hinkie to take over the Magic.
Oh yeah, well, he'll at least clean up the freaking books. It's a disaster. But the point is, you know, he's rent controlled, and actually the opposite, even better than rent controlled, his price is going down year over year. So that's a really good point, Chris.
Yeah. Moving on, the next question we have is about LeBron. It's kind of, I think, something I'll answer, and then I'll flip the question a little bit. So Kevin at KVSLATT asked, could you give an update on resting plans for LBJ? I know they will wind him down in January, but he is playing a lot of minutes. So I'll say this right now. I think the Cavs' resting plan is to give him a night off on the second half of a back-to-back if the situation calls for it, if he wants it. I think you'll start seeing him maybe take time off in January like he's alluding to, but is that the right plan for LeBron? Is that something you guys think is the right way to rest him? Because I will say, on Saturday, he looked pretty freaking good on the second half of a back-to-back where he played over 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think rest for LeBron's a good idea. I am legitimately worried about this team, because I think that outside of the big three, and then maybe I put Tristan Thompson in there as well, this team has kind of been getting its offense only from those four players and not no one else really. And occasionally, like, we had a game like on Saturday where Iman Shumpert went off, and that's great, and he's actually been looking decent, like much improved this year, but JR meanwhile has had a three-point percentage that is at career lows, right? And so I think that we're using and relying on LeBron a lot, and trying to win games without him for a stretch of games is going to be really tough, but it does preserve him for the playoffs, and I think we need that. I think I would focus more so even on, before getting LeBron rest, on getting like another ball handler in there, someone that can get rest for LeBron and Kyrie's legs immediately. I think that's probably our big need at this point. But I do think you probably rest him for a few weeks and rest him on back-to-backs.
He's been playing kind of a lot of minutes the last couple of games. And I think a lot of that's just due to players not suiting up, especially when they miss Channing Frye. That just leaves them down to two functional bigs in their rotation, in Tristan and Love, because they don't really want to play Birdman because he is a fossil. So I think he's had to kind of take a bigger minutes load recently just because of that. He has to play a lot of power forward and even some center against the Hornets. But I don't know. I just think you kind of have to like play it by ear. Like the thing that people don't really account for with his rest games is like, honestly, like there are games where like, I don't know, this guy has just gotten so good at pacing himself in games. And you know, like we like to make jokes about his effort level or, you know, oh, LeBron's not trying tonight, but like some of that is self-preservational and it works well for him, right? Like he has a very solid understanding at this point of what his body kind of needs and like how, like whether he can give peak effort on a given night. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of just trust them to not like, this guy understands himself so well and prioritizes his health so well that you kind of have to like trust the plan there, right? It's not like, you know, like not everyone is wired just like Tim Duncan, you know, like everyone has different physiologies. And like if this system works for him and it seems to be, you know, like you don't, I mean, when's the last time we're like, LeBron looks like he's really wearing down. Like you don't see that. So I think they, what they're doing is good. You know, giving him a few days off here and there and resting them when they can.
Yeah, I'm with Carter. As far as LeBron preserving himself on the court, you look at the way he's playing this year, and we've rarely seen full out LeBron so far, and I think that helps him. So as far as not having to rest him a ton of games, but at the same time, I still would like to see him sit out a handful of, you know, second nights of back-to-backs.
Let me ask you guys this before we go to the next question. Right now, based on the numbers he's posted, the other candidates in the field, where is he in your MVP rankings? Because for me, I think he's third.
Who are your top two?
Russ and Harden. Like, I just think the numbers they're putting up are just insane, and they're good enough. And I think Harden would be number one for me right now.
Let me take a peek at the all standings here.
Is
Russell Westbrook still averaging a triple double? Yes. He's MVP.
I'm with Dan. You gotta go, Russ.
That's like literally one other person has even attempted that is Oscar Robertson, right? I don't know. I think Westbrook is MVP, but I would probably put LeBron fourth behind Harden. And I'm sorry, I'm gonna give KD the edge here. He's been really, really good, and the Warriors have just looked better. I don't think it's not like LeBron's not trying, but I don't know if he's maybe the 44-point performance on Saturday was really great. But I do give KD a slight edge.
I think the argument for KD is that he's been hyper efficient on the league's like scariest team, and he's been like I think he's probably been the best player in that team all year.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I guess LeBron is like second or third for me right now. I think Harden's my MVP as well.
Shout out to Carter Rodriguez, the new reinstated Chicago bureau chief of Fear the Sword.
Yeah, happy to be here. I think that the Rockets are tied for the fourth best record in the league, and it's just all Harden. It's all Harden. It's crazy. Like he does literally everything for them. He averages like 12 assists a game. He's efficient while he's doing it, which sometimes you can't say for Russ. Does James Harden have more talent on his team than Russ Westbrook? No. And their numbers are pretty close. Like I don't know. I know he gets a lot of flack in ESPN circles, but Ethan Strauss has been kind of railing against the triple-double because it's so arbitrary. It's just like, oh, he put up 35, 7, and 12, but that other guy put up 29, 11, and 11. So he had a triple-double. It's a better game. No, it's not. Like it's completely arbitrary, and it's this made up benchmark that like we have assigned value to, but doesn't inherently have value. So like, sure, Russ is great, and he is in my top three, top four in that region. He's incredible. But I'm not like just averaging a triple double, like that alone does not cement you as the MVP. His team has the eighth best record in the league right now. And I just don't think it's good enough.
If he pulls it off, it's crazy. Like I'm with Carter in this. Like I think if he pulls off averaging those numbers for a whole year and him doing it that many times in a row like he's done, I think he deserves a ton of credit for it. I think just Harden's been better. Like, and if you ask me today, like, if I wanted to start a team today, like, who am I taking? I'm probably taking Harden.
I would, too. And the fact of the matter is LeBron, like, I don't know, like, it's just funny. I was talking to Justin Rowan about this in one of my various million G-chats to all of you people. I was like, it's just kind of funny to watch Russ, like, kill himself going 125% effort to get, like, slightly better numbers than LeBron, who goes at like 70% every day.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I just like, in terms of like, I mean, this is where the word value and its nebulous definition really play in. And like, to be clear, like, Russ is probably like, I think third on my ballot or second on my ballot. So it's not like I'm like dogging the guy, but like, value is really nebulous and difficult. And like, sure, Russ is insanely valuable for that team, but they've kind of built this team around him, forcing him to have an insane usage. And I think the Rockets did the same thing, and the Rockets are doing a better job. They're a better team, and I think that you have to credit James Harden for that. In terms of the Durant thing, this is the most interesting topic of the season right now for me, is how valuable is Kevin Durant? Because obviously the numbers are insane. Most efficient season of all time right now. But it's like, it's really hard for me to vote for him for MVP, because it's like, do teams in their pregame meetings, is he the first thing they try to take away? I don't think so. I think it's really hard to assign value to a team with this much high end talent, because it's like game planning against Team USA. Like, do you think Serbia is like, okay, how are we going to stop Paul George today? No, they're just like, well, let's just try to play some fundamental defense and see if they play stupid. You know, like, oh, like, I guess we'll, like, blitz a few pick and rolls. Like, you don't, like, when you play against the Cavs, or you play against the Rockets, or you play against the Thunder, or you play against the Pelicans, the teams are coming up with plans to try to bother their best players. And those players have to produce in light of those game plans. I don't think Kevin Durant gets that level of attention. How many times does that guy get to go ISO on a point guard after they had to switch the Steph Curry high pick and roll? His job is so easy. Like, I don't know. Like, he's obviously, like, if the NBA had an Offensive Player of the Year award, he would totally get that. But I don't know if I could give him MVP. Am I completely crazy right now?
I think he's been the best player on that team, and I think if you have to put a candidate from that team forward, and I think it would be him.
Yeah, I mean, he would probably get my vote, but like, if I had to pick the most valuable player of the Warriors, but in terms of compared to like how much value other players have for their teams in the league, it's just hard for me to vote for a guy that gets to do whatever he wants and has the easiest job of anyone.
I think the Cavs, the Clippers, and the Warriors being who they are made Russ and Harden these very unique candidates. And if Kawhi was playing at a higher level than he is, and he was putting up like absurd numbers, he'd be in that same kind of category, I think.
But dude, it's not unique to them.
Like, I'm saying it's unique to this season. I'm saying it's like you have these vacuums of players like on really good teams, and therefore like Harden and Russ putting up these numbers and carrying their teams. We haven't seen really an MVP race like this in a couple of years. Like, we just haven't.
But what I'm saying is, not at this volume. Like, their usage rates are unique, but every MVP year by year is the guy the teams try to take away.
Yeah.
On every other team, the Warriors are the unicorn here, and it makes them really hard to evaluate. And I'm pretty sure I'm honestly wrong about this, but it's just so hard for me to evaluate. They're so unique in their structure that, like, this isn't even the Miami Heat, where it was like, okay, LeBron is still the best player. We have to stop him. You know, like, this is unique. Like, they just play Team USA basketball.
I mean, I I think there's two things going on here. The first is that, like, even if you can game plan out certain players, I don't think you can game plan out Kevin Durant. Like, he is probably the second best player in the NBA, like, after LeBron, I think.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
what I'm saying is they try to game plan him out. They try to make his job as hard as possible.
Yeah.
They don't do that. They do not try to make Kevin Durant's job as hard as possible. That is not the main thing they do.
I think being a fourth player trying to all score with players like Clay, like Dre, like Steph, who I think have egos and need to get fed, I think that is actually a difficult position to be in, especially to be the new guy. So I don't know if Kevin Durant's job is that easy, but I think he is playing like he belongs in the top two or maybe three in MVP voting right now.
So. Yeah, but for me, I guess I kind of take the word valuable to pretty literally when it comes to this. If you take Kevin Durant off the Warriors, they're still insanely good. If you take James Harden or Russell Westbrook off the Rockets or Thunder, they're nowhere near what they are right now. So how can a guy – and don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking Kevin Durant. He's playing basketball this year.
Yeah, we all know he's awesome.
How can you say that he's as more valuable than those guys who are pretty much their whole teams?
Yeah, I think that's the question with this. And that's what I mean when I say it's like a weird MVP race, because normally it's like we think, okay, best guy, best team. When LeBron went to Miami, that was the year LeBron was still the best player. Derrick Rose won because of the switch. Like, this year we're seeing something of that, but then you have two guys that are just doing sort of absurd things with bad rosters.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
To move this back to the Cavs a little bit, we got a really interesting question from Slade. He actually has two questions. The first is this. The Cavs just did the water bottle challenge when they were just destroying the Knicks. If you haven't seen it, you can just go find the video. It's funny, and like they were just kind of having fun, whatever. What's the thing you would like to see the Cavs do if they had another situation where they do the water bottle challenge? Like, what's something they could do as a team and goof around on the sidelines?
Well, can we talk about the water bottle challenge for just a second here?
Yeah, like, of course. I've been waiting for this. Like, this is the most exciting thing. Like, I've thought more about them doing the water bottle challenge than I have their defense, because it's like, the defense is going to be fine in June. Like, right now, it's like, whatever, basketball, whatever.
So first is, like, the water bottle challenge is, like, over 6 months old. So I think it's really funny that they are, like, just now, like, doing it. But maybe they do it, like, off camera as well. But how insulting would you guys say this is? Like, is this the most ridiculous and insulting thing that the Cavs have ever done in franchise history? Is this more insulting than anything that the Warriors have done? I don't know. I think it's like, to be a little hyperbolistic right now, I think it was probably the most offensive thing that LeBron James has done, like, on a court ever.
I think it's funny because it was playing against the team Phil Jackson runs. Like, I think that's what made it more funny to me, because of all the beef between them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, maybe he's smart. Maybe he did it on purpose, but it's crazy to me.
I think he totally did it on purpose, and it's totally disrespectful, and I love it.
Yeah.
I would be so pissed if I were a Knicks fan watching that. Oh, my God. It's so funny. And like, it's like the ultimate, like we've. I was talking to a few coworkers about how this is like the pettiest league we've ever had. Like, it's so dramatic, and like high school drama is so it's just everywhere. And like doing these little like crappy things to one another, like icing cookies with tombstones on them for the Warriors or the villain party. It's so silly.
Oh, that villain balloon thing, man. Like.
My favorite part about all of those things is like thinking about the process. Like LeBron James had to call his caterer and say, all right, So here's what I want you to do. I want you to please ice some of these cookies and then draw a tombstone on them and then write Steph Curry on it. That's hilarious to me. Like that he went through his day doing that. It just kills me, and I love it. Love the water bottle challenge, even though I would totally be pissed if another team did it to us.
All right, so what would you guys have?
I feel like I'm kind of missing on something. Oh, I was just saying, I feel like I'm kind of missing on something with this, because when I saw it, when I was watching the game, I thought it was funny, but then it didn't really register to me that it could be seen as disrespectful until the next day when I was listening to the Dan Patrick show. They were really laying into the Cavs. I mean, I guess after some more thought, it was pretty disrespectful, but I don't know why, but it just didn't register with me. Maybe I'm just used to LeBron kind of rubbing it in, or like Carter said, being petty. I don't know, but I just thought it was funny during the game.
Well, it's like a clear lack of engagement in the game. Like, it's not even like pretending that you care about that. Like, oh, we're beating you so bad that we don't even have, we can play a stupid game and throw a water bottle onto the court. Like, I don't know. I think it's pretty obviously disrespectful, I don't care.
Oh, I mean, I get the disrespect now. It's just for some reason it didn't register with right away.
Yeah. So what would you guys
answer your question?
Yeah, I think it's Pokemon Go. I think it's Amon Shumpert from Pokemon Go.
Oh, gosh.
He just, like, runs out on center court to find a Snorlax.
Yeah, there's just, like, just something, like, really, like, even if it's, like, not even rare, it could be something dumb. I want Shump to make, like, a big deal about it. Like, there could be, like, a Pidgeot in the middle of, in the game where they're playing, like, the Sixers, and it's just, like, he's throwing Pokemon and it happens to be, like, Joel, like, at a player. Like, that's what I want. That would never happen, but that's what I want.
How about walking across the street to an Indians game before the game's over?
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, it's fine. We're good.
I would be up for something along the lines of either balancing spoons on noses or like a Rube Goldberg machine all along the sideline. Like, just like set up a bunch of dominoes and just set them off. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Can we, how do we feel about Monmouth bench style celebrations?
Always on board. Like, always on board with nonsense.
Like every time Jordan McRae hits a three when he's in for garbage time, like they just freak out. They do love that dude.
Yeah, just go insane.
It's crazy how they've like fallen in love with these end of bench guys. Like, remember when LeBron James was inviting Jared Cunningham to his like pregame warmups, his shooting sessions last year? Like, they just like take these guys who like are like marginal NBA players and like trick us into thinking they're going to be like long term guys because they just love them so much.
Jared Cunningham, who's now playing in China,
he's playing on my Milwaukee Bucks franchise in NBA 2K. So think about that.
I will think very very hard about that, Carter. As I
thought you might.
Carter, I'm so glad you talked about your 2K team. I want to talk about mine too. Mine's like the Utah Jazz. Like, I don't know.
They're
undefeated.
Oh, congratulations! It's thank probably you. Not too different. We have a fantasy jar at work. It's like a swear jar, because no one gives a shit about your fantasy team. So if you talk about your fantasy team, you got to throw a dollar in because nobody cares.
Yeah. No one does care about fantasy. Moving on, next question from Adam Eaton. He asked on Twitter, has JR's poor shooting been more detrimental than we thought?
I've been devastated by it. I just, like, I don't know what my life is like without JR making threes. No, I don't know. It's been okay. I think JR's okay. He probably would have benefited from a full off season and preseason, like working out with the Cavs. Probably didn't happen that way. So I expect, and I hope that as we get further on the season, he'll be there.
I was, at work and, not to be a piece of shit name dropper, but, Antoine Walker works at my network. And I like, we were doing like a pre-show meeting. I like turned around and I was like, how many times do you think JR practiced this summer? He's like, not a lot. So I don't know.
Yeah, way to bury the lead that you work with Antoine Walker, Carter.
We don't talk a lot. He's a nice guy though. But Yeah, Dan's completely right. I think he's really hurting from not having been in this, because like that's kind of the thing, right? Like that we all talk about is like the reason he's been so good as a Cavalier is that he has the structure and leadership that kind of keep him reined in. And he was kind of, I mean, obviously he didn't like completely, he wasn't like on an island, but he wasn't with the team every day, you know, practicing, working out together. And I think that that's probably hard on his routine because this guy seems to have found something that works here. So I'd give it some time before we just assume he's terrible now. That seems kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about this until, say, after the All-Star break he was still struggling. Then maybe you get a little worried. But isn't this exactly what we all expected after the holdout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's 100%. Historically not as good in the beginning of the season and on Sundays.
Yeah, well, wonder why Sundays.
Two things J.R. Smith struggles with, Sundays and shooting to start the season. Those are them fancy stats. That's what they tell us. That's what they're here for, to make sure. I really also do love, I don't know if you guys have ever knew where that Sunday thing came from, but like a kid at Harvard researched that. And that kid,
that's awesome.
That's amazing. Like someone going to one of the best universities in the world. That's what they did. And I don't remember the person's name, but they're my hero. So we have our last question for the day from Slade. He says, the Cavs have the 19th-ranked defense per the NBA stats defensive rating. By the way, that's up to 17th now after Saturday's game.
Yeah.
Still, you know, inching up. Are you worried at all that this is a bad defensive team or that they can't ramp it up enough for the playoffs?
Does this person own the Cavs championship DVD? I just am curious, because have they seen Kevin Love play defense against Steph Curry? I'm sorry, that was a really snarky answer to somebody, but no, yeah. I think Cavs are good. I definitely think that the idea of the honeymoon is real, and that LeBron even owned up to it. Like, they've been kind of cruising and having fun. I don't know if they're really trying, but I trust that like when the time comes where they want to take this game seriously in the playoffs, that they have that ability and that they'll try again. So,
yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I kind of felt like the regular season was largely inconsequential for them as long as they, you know, remain healthy. So I can't imagine them not picking it up towards the end of the season and once the playoffs come around.
I think something that is worth noting is that the way their roster changed from last year to this year sets a higher requirement for effort from the team at large. Last year you had Dele playing heavy minutes, and you had Timofey Mozgov playing heavy minutes. And sure, Mozgov's defensive metrics weren't phenomenal, but the thing about those guys is even if the team isn't playing at their peak, you know you're going to get a good effort out of both those guys on the defensive end, especially Dele. And as a result, when you lose those guys and give, you know, all of Mozgov's minutes to Channing Frye, who, you know, no one would pretend is a good defender, what it doesn't doom you defensively, but it does set a higher benchmark for defensive effort. The Cavs have to work a little bit harder than they did last year and they can get there. Obviously, they benched Dele and Mozgov in the playoffs last year and had a great defensive effort. But the difference is in the regular season, they didn't have great effort. So yeah. I don't think they're trying any less hard. I don't think they tried any harder last year, but they just had natural try hard personnel on their roster. So I think their defensive numbers are going to suffer in the regular season pretty much all year as compared to last year, just because of the personnel grouping, because really they don't need to work that hard to succeed on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah. For context, the Cavs last year were 10th in defensive rating. They were 20th in 2014-15, 17th from January 9th, which is when they that season from when they acquired Mozgov. And just remember, the Cavs probably are going to have issues defensively because Kyrie Irving is their point guard, Kevin Love is their power forward, and Tristan Thompson is a good defensive center. He's not your traditional rim-protecting center. Like, there are just sort of structural inherently structural issues with the Cavs' defense, and I think that's just kind of unavoidable.
And a lot of those issues go away once LeBron James starts trying his hardest.
Yeah, LeBron James becomes your rim protector. LeBron James becomes your lockdown defender. It means Iman Shumpert can defend the secondary guy. It means you can hide Kyrie on the Iguodalas of the world. You get more useful scenarios when those things happen.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, something that people don't take into account enough. But they're going to be good. They're going to be fine, I think, once the playoffs comes around. But their overall metrics are going to suffer just a little bit.
Before we get out of here, just want to remind you guys of something, and I hope this hope Dan enjoys this. Don't let 2016 distract you from the fact that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals, and go buy a limited edition 3-1 lead lapel pin and sticker pack from I'm Sorry Mark Jackson, a merch store by Daniel Rowell, the dude that you've heard on this podcast. While you're there, you can pick up a Doris Burke pin or a Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy sticker. All proceeds go directly to Dan's donut-filled die in art. So you can go to bit.ly/sorrymark and buy Dan's pin so Dan can buy donuts. Dan, how was my live read?
So good. I am shipping 20 pins today. I'm so, so excited. And that's a lie. It's like 34 pins because people are buying multiple pins. So one, like, get your pins now because they're going. And two, thank you, everyone. I am going to buy a donut on Monday and savor it. So thanks, Chris.
Of course.
Dan, being a sellout really suits you.
It's the worst. I am actually the worst.
No, you're not. You're incredible. And your art is awesome. I'm picking up my pens here pretty soon in person. Can't wait because I live in the Chicago metropolitan area. If anyone listening to this also lives in Chicago, Dan will not just bring you his pens like he's going to bring me mine. We have a really good relationship, so you're going to really have to work for that one. But yeah, they're awesome. I have a T-shirt with one of Dan's Kyrie art on a V-neck that I wear on the reg. Get regular compliments. Dan's awesome. That's the long and short of it.
Yeah, so go buy his stuff. And so thanks to Carter, thanks to Dan, thanks to Mike, who has had some internet issues, so he dropped off at the end of here. But make sure to go to follow all of them on Twitter. You can find Carter on Twitter at Carter_Shade, if I'm not mistaken. You can find Dan at Daniel J. Rowell. You can find Mike at M_DraftShow21. You can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. Go give us that 5-star rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. And I just like getting positive feedback because it makes me feel better about myself. And
Chris is also a sellout.
I am a sellout. I got to shill. I got to get good at shilling because it's something I'm not good at. But guys, thanks for coming on. Did this live up to the very low expectations I'm sure you had when I asked you to do this a couple days ago?
This is definitely a 44-9-10 game.
Wow. That's great. That
was so kind.
All right, I had a lovely time. I'm going to go hang out with my girlfriend now.
All right. So for Chris, for Dan, for Carter, or for me, wow, reference myself in third person. So for Carter, for Dan, for Mike, this has been Locked On Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow. Kevin Young from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, SB Nation's Grizzlies blog, will be the guest. And we'll preview the Cavs, who are playing the Grizzlies 2 times in 2 days. And that's super weird. So we'll talk to you then.